Madam Chancellor,
ladies and gentlemen, this is a very interesting and important date and ceremony in the history and the development of this university. I say that because Canada and British Columbia and this coastal region of British Columbia trace historically to our native peoples whose art and whose domestic buildings are represented here this afternoon. We're very happy that some of the leaders of our original Canadians are here with us to take part in this ceremony and to do honor to the university. Now, it has been and continues to be the hope and the expectation of the university that this is the beginning rather than the completion of this development. We have, as most of you know, a little farther to the south, another development of a different group of our native peoples in a different setting. We hope that at least two others of the groups will be adequately represented either in this area or just across Agronomy Road, where the Board of Governors of the University have set aside some 5 acres to be and to continue as part of this totem park. It now gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce to you and to call on our Chancellor, Dr. Phyllis Ross, to speak to.
Dr. Ross.
Mr. President,
distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, may I second what the President has said in welcoming you here to this very important ceremony at the university today. One of the purposes of a great university has long been the fostering and preservation of the fine arts, as well as of knowledge in the humanities and sciences. It is the unique privilege of the University of British Columbia to be located where one of the world's most important traditions of sculpture began and flowered. The native Indians of this coast created arts for which the region is famed in the major galleries and museums of the world. Unfortunately, these arts, particularly the massive sculpturing of wood, lost their traditional purposes within historic times and found no support during the recent changes in the conditions of Indian life. The group of carvings now placed in this park represent the desire of the university to recreate for enlightenment and enjoyment some outstanding works within the earlier canons of native Indian art. In traditional times, guests would be invited, much as they have been today, to the opening of a new house or the erection of a memorial pole which honored one of the notable dead. But the ceremonies would be longer than that which we propose to hold this afternoon. They might extend for several weeks. The family would have saved up for the occasion, perhaps for years. Others would have been asked to come to its assistance, very much as we asked, and received support from the Canada Council, Dr. H.R. McMillan, Mr. Walter Kerner, and others whose help made the project possible. The ceremonies at a traditional house opening would include dances and songs presenting the family history. We are not in a position to supply these arts today, but they also were some of the memorable achievements of the native people. The hosts would also supply a feast which will be represented by the tea we hope guests will attend at the faculty club afterwards. The carvings themselves fitted with the Indian ceremonies of commemoration. They illustrated the history and the traditions of the family that carved or commissioned them. The figures on the carving recall incidents of the past and affirm claims to power and position. But the significant point is that the carvings also became art, and in some hands, even great art. The human desire to create beauty went beyond the mere representation. The animal and other figures on the carvings are not intended to be realistic. They are highly stylized, and only the knowledgeable man can identify some of the figures in these or any other Indian carvings. But the canons of their portrayal turned them into art, which transcended the mere representation of power and position. The carvers created new rules of form, proportion, and significance, which today are seen to belong among the great artistic traditions of the world. The carvings in this park, of course, have a new meaning, different from that which they would have had in the Indian society of the last century. Most of the sculptures in this new section are not copied from older carvings and do not belong to the traditions of any one family and clan. In contrast, they have been carved as part of our attempt to study and to match the highest achievements of a vanishing past. They may serve as inspiration for other sculptors and artists, perhaps some of them Indian, others not. And from these carvings, students can learn principles of design and representation which may lead to still new arts as yet undeveloped, arts which will be as truly native to the British Columbia of the future as these are to that of the past.
I would now like to call on Mr. Kenneth Capel, a member of the Board of Governors, distinguished citizen, to tell you something of the history of our totem development and park. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. McKenzie. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to take your time to tell you the full history of this development because it's been foretold very well on notes here. And I think you'll get the facts very clearly and quickly from that. But this park today, the thing I feel we really should mention is the result of many different people who have contributed to this development over the years. The imagination of many people, the hard work of many people, and the financial contributions of many people. There used to be, some of you may remember, two little totem poles around over in the Japanese park. And these were the first two totem poles that were brought to the university campus. They were suggested as a gift to the university by Sherwood Leth and Bill Murphy. And following that, the suggestion was made by Mr. Hunter Lewis and others that we carry this project forward. Mrs. Hamber and Mr. Hamber became enthusiasts in the early days, and as a consequence, the park at the far side was developed. Therefore, I feel that we all must make sure that we remember the many different people who were so busy and so thoughtful in the early development. When we say this is a historic occasion, as Dr. McKenzie mentioned, I think many of us think that history is something to do with Europe or Egypt or the Euphrates or some other part. Some years ago, I was traveling in the United States and I happened to see the show of the Habsburg treasures. And one of the things in that show that gave me a great deal of pleasure was a copper discus that had been found on the south coast of Sicily, and on it was carved a very simple but very beautiful leaping dolphin. And the little note in the exhibit said this was carved or produced about 2,500 years ago. And it appealed to your imagination that some Greek youth tossed that discus 2,500 years ago and was having an interesting time with it. I came home from that trip, and one of the shows I saw within a week or so was an Indian show in the art gallery, and that Indian show had some very beautiful carvings of fish hooks and bone artifacts which had been dug up here in this Point Grey area by our anthropologist. And a little note said at the bottom, carved 2,500 years ago. So while we think of history as being Greece and Rome and the places of the Far East, we mustn't forget that history was taking place here on this point, and there was a civilization here, a fine civilization, a flowering civilization, where people created things of beauty just as they did in Greece and other parts of the world. Some poet has said, "Very old are we men, our dreams are tales told in dim Eden by Eve's nightingale." And so while we dream the historical dreams, we mustn't forget that there were these wonderful activities taking place on the ground we're walking on now. The university has many facets to its life. There are those who want more books for the library, and those who want more cyclotrons, and those who want more buildings, and those who want more salaries, and all of the other problems. This park is just one of the many facets of the rich, full-flowering growth of our university. And it's due to people, as I've mentioned, many people, but particularly Dr. McKenzie and his enthusiasm for all of the good things of life. And therefore, to me particularly, it's a great pleasure to be here today, while Dr. McKenzie is still on the campus with us, to see this extra and additional facet of the richness of the university life. So that the only other thing I want to say is that I hope that all of you will enjoy this and support these kinds of activities, and remember that this full flowering culture that we're seeing today has been going on this campus and around about for at least the last 2,500 years.
Thank you. The man who has perhaps done most to bring this development about is Professor Harry Hawthorne, and I would like to call on him for a few words.
Sir Hawthorne.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'd like to just talk about three people whose day this is particularly above all others. They are the three who have carved, kept the traditions alive, ones that culminated in this park. First of all would be one old man who couldn't come today. He's nearly 80, and the last word I had was he was in hospital in Alert Bay. This was the man that Hunter Lewis located 15 years ago when we decided to repair the poles we'd brought down, old Mungo Martin. When Hunter found him, Mungo was the only man who had in his own fingers and brain the traditions and the techniques of this unique art. But for Mungo, the art would have been completely dead. And one of the things Mungo had in his mind as he worked with us, and then later when Wilson Duff took him to Victoria, was not only to produce, but to train other men. Mungo's got lots of monuments, one standing in London, many in Thunderbird Park, some in the other section of this park, but this new section is in part a monument also to Mungo, who kept the traditions alive when no others had them. The second person to whom this day belongs is Doug Cranmer. Doug, who is sitting on the platform now, trained with Mungo and became a very skillful carver. Doug's father was a notable scholar, a man who helped produce many books on the life of his people, and Doug had an orientation toward the duty of presenting the best parts of quadrupedal life to the world. Doug was carving with us assiduously for 2 or 3 years, and I'm happy to say that he has now continued to carve with the Park Board of Vancouver in Stanley Park. Above all, this is Bill Reid's day. Bill Reid was a man of many talents. In fact, this is no day to be modest. I think Bill Reid's a man of genius. Yet when he had persuaded President Mackenzie to get a grant from the Canada Council to start this work, I think Bill was a frightened man. Not frightened because he gave up a good-paying job for something that wasn't quite known, but I think as he stood beside the first log and had something like this in his mind, but a lot of work in between, I think Bill was frightened. But obviously he no longer is, because now Bill's a master. And this park is, I think, not only representative of the finest in Haida art, but I think that it's right to say that nothing in the arts within this past decade has been produced in Canada that would match this. So I think that we're all happy to share Bill's great day with him and to wish his ads strength and skill in the future.
Bill, would you like to take a bow? To Bill Reed, ladies and gentlemen. And Mr. Douglas Tremmer. As you will see from your programs, we had hoped to have had with us this afternoon the Chief William Asu of the Haida Indians. Unfortunately, he found it impossible to be here, but he did send us greetings and good wishes. I would now like to call on the Reverend Peter Kelly, himself a member of the Haidas, to officially open this Haida Totem Center Park and give us his blessing. The Reverend Mr. Kelly.
Mr. President, Madam Chancellor, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be here this afternoon to take a little part in this wonderful ceremony dedicating the Haida section of this totem park. I have been asked to say a few words about the totems. How old is totemism? I notice some anthropologists and some scientists say that it's just a matter of a short time since totems have been carved. According to the legends of our people, the Haidas, it is centuries old. I might say thousands of years old. The legend goes back to the time when, after the flood, we have stories of the flood too, the legends of the flood. When the traveling raven came down from the heavens and came down to a place, to a house where smoke was coming out through the roof, he came down and lit on the top of a totem pole. And that totem pole was made of stone, not wood, but stone. That's the first totem pole we have any reference of. And since that time, totem poles have been made by our people, the Haidas. I might say they are the, I think I can truthfully say they have originated the art of carving totem poles. And looking around this park this afternoon, looking at the Haida section, I see all the different grades of totem poles are represented here. The large totem pole standing in front of the house represents The chief who has erected the house and who called his guests to this place. And he would, in front of the assembled guests, tell how he became heir to the things that are on the totem pole, the carvings on the totem pole, the images. And when that was done, he gave gifts to his guests. It was asserting his right to the things that he had put on the totem pole, so that it would never be challenged. Now, we have such a totem pole in front of the house. I'm not going to start trying to read the story there. That would take quite a time. And the next totem pole close by here is a mortuary pole where the nobility and the chiefs, when they died, were put away right at the top there. There'd be a hollow place. And there they'd be laid and put away. And the tall totem pole we see over there is a memorial pole. It depicted some great event or a great loss of the chief's relatives, nephews or sons, or his wife. And in memory of such a memorial pole like that was erected. And this one that we have in the middle there, of course, is a more of an entrance pole. And there's one other kind of a pole that is missing here. Probably it's inside. It was always inside the house. There were smaller poles. They were not erected in every home or every house, but only in the homes of the leading chiefs. They were shorter poles, of course, and they were very much respected. This afternoon, Mr. President, I'm going to follow the procedure of the Haidas of long ago. And I have some gifts here. It's a little different from the gifts that were given in times past, when a chief would give good many things before they came in contact with commercial organizations. They gave sea otters, the most valuable of all forbearing animals on the sea. And canoes, boxes that were wonderfully carved, wearing apparel that was made by their hands. It took many, many months, sometimes years, to make. And later on, of course, when the trading post came among them, they gave blankets. They would buy bales of blankets. And these were given. And each chief that received the gift was entitled to just so much, according to his rank. And it was never given below anything less than what he's entitled to was never given. It would be an insult. And that kind of an insult, many a time, led to bloodshed. Therefore, it was observed very strictly. Each chief got exactly what he was entitled to. So this afternoon, I have few gifts here. In honor of this great occasion, we're going to give few potlatch things. That's where the word potlatch comes from. Potlatch is nothing more than giving. Sometimes they have the word color spot, lads. Well, that literally means giving without any expectation of receiving anything in return. The first one I have here is for Mrs. Frank Mackenzie Ross, the Madam Chancellor of the University.
I will call upon the Madam Chancellor to receive this gift. Open it, and I think you will see it's worthwhile.
And the inscription on that is the beaver.
I might say that's a beaver. And the wood that is embedded in is made of the totem pole in front of the house.
That's simply wonderful. Thank you so much. I shall treasure this always. Thank you.
The next one has the name of Chief Asu, Billy Asu, who represents the non-Indian, the non-Haida Indians. The non-Haida Indians is not here.
I think your granddaughter is somewhere here in the audience. Vicki Haig Brown should be in the audience.
Is Vicki Haig Brown here? Would she come forward, please?
This is his granddaughter. This is for your grandfather.
And I might say the carving on this is the Thunderbird.
I didn't expect this. Thank you, dear.
The next one is for Dr. Norman Mackenzie, the president of the university. The inscription on this, or the carving on this one, is the eagle. You'll find that carving on that.
Thank you so much, sir.
Mr. Capel. Carving on that is the dogfish, or rather the shark.
Thank you very much, sir.
The next one has the name of Dr. H.B. Hawthorne. On yours is the whale.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly.
The next one is for the Honorable T.V. Klein. The Honorable T.B. Klein.
Did you get this from Mike Klein? Yeah.
It has the...
Is Mrs. Klein here?
We'll have to get through before the rain comes, I guess. The next one is for Mr. Corner. Mr. Walter Corner. Yours has the raven. That happens to be my crest. So you and I are of the same crest. Mr. Ed Favell. On that you'll find the bear.
Thank you very much, sir.
Now, Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, may I hurriedly say that I have great pleasure in declaring the Hyder section of this totem park open to the public.
Thank you. Thank you for the gift.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you will see from your programs, you're invited to have tea in the faculty club immediately following this ceremony. This, while not as adequate or appropriate as the returns that those who receive gifts should make to the giver, is in a sense a token of our appreciation to the Reverend Mr. Kelly and to the others who have made this section, this Hyder section of the totem park, possible. I don't want to take any more of your time, except that again I would like to pay tribute, as Professor Hawthorne and Mr. Capel have already done, to two or three individuals to whom we owe so much in respect of this park. To Hunter Lewis, who, in a sense, thought of the idea and worked hard to achieve it, and who assisted us in bringing Marius Barbeau from the National Museum in Ottawa here to inspect the remaining totems upcountry. To Harry Hawthorne, to Bill Reed, to Mungo Martin, to Douglas Kramer, and the others. I listened to Ken Capel say something about 2,500 years, and it brought to mind that Dr. Carl Borden, who's over here, and who is the archaeologist of the West Coast, and a very distinguished one, tells us that over 8,000 years ago, even up to 10,000 years ago, there were these peoples here. To all of them, and to the Canada Council, who took some persuading to agree that this particular form of Canadian art deserved their support, but which eventually was generously given, partly as a result of that unique display of original totem poles on University Boulevard in the year of the centennial of the province, the 50th anniversary of the university, and the opening of the Vancouver Festival, to which we had invited all of the Canada Council. A few weeks ago, I brought Dr. Truman, the director of the council, over here to see some of the results of the investment that the council have made in us. I want to say in particular a word to Mrs. Hamber in respect of the part that she and her late husband, the Honorable Mr. Hamber, played in making this whole development possible. Because without their encouragement and practical assistance, we would not have been able to proceed. And to you, Mrs. Hamber, we're very, very grateful for what you've done. And to Mr. McMillan, and to Mr. Kerner, and Mr. Filvell, and to others who have very generously contributed the wonderful cedar logs and timbers that have gone into the making of these houses and the carving of these totem poles. We again, sir, are very grateful. Now, obviously, this is an auspicious occasion, or we wouldn't have a little rain to help us along, to lay the dust. But as we would be sorry to see any of you get wet, I'm going to formally declare this part of the ceremony concluded and hope that you will all join us under shelter in the faculty club for tea immediately. Any of you who may wish to inspect the totem houses may do so at your leisure either today or on another occasion. Thank you very much, Madam Chancellor and ladies and gentlemen.